important, and you're thinking that if it doesn't work out, your life is literally over. You might as well be Kenny from South Park, because there's no hope for you. You need this. Your entire existence depends on this. You are a mere mortal, and this success is essential to your survival. It's basically oxygen. To this I say, stop. I don't want you to be gasping for air like a fish out of water when you have something important to do. If you think about it, it's quite terrifying and, to be blunt, stupid to base your entire education or career on one opportunity. Of course, some things in life are very important, but a boss understands that no one thing should make or break you. You are building an empire, and you should know that empires are not built overnight, and they do not fall easily. They should be built on a strong foundation, so that they withstand the test of time and are resilient when threatened. Empires are not built upon a single pillar, and similarly, your career should not be built on a single success. One success is a terrific building block, but it's not the only thing supporting you. If you land a promotion at work, your empire isn't resting on this one promotion. Your previous work experience, school degree, and great technical skills all act as pillars that hold you up. Similarly, one pillar crumbling away does not destroy an entire empire. Therefore, one failure should not destroy everything you've built. In other words, if one opportunity will make or break your success, then your idea of success isn't solid enough to begin with. Even if you get the job, ace the test, or kill the sales pitch, you can't bank your entire success on one achievement. Your success shouldn't walk on stilts. But I get it. When you're faced with a great opportunity, your mind can get a bit carried away and dramatic. Throughout my career, I've received many opportunities to collaborate on videos with some pretty cool people, including Selena Gomez, Priyanka Chopra, Shay Mitchell, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Every time I'm presented with one of these opportunities, I struggle to come up with a video idea, which is strange since I normally pump out 2 creative videos a week. But I end up convincing myself that no idea is good enough for this once-in-a-lifetime collaboration. After all, this collaboration is with someone epic and it needs to be better than anything else I've ever done. What if 1 million new people who've never heard of me watch this video? What if my entire future on YouTube depends on this one collaboration? I rack my brain trying to think of something spectacular, and if all goes well, I finally write a creative I feel confident about. I shoot the video, edit it, and upload it, expecting it to alter the trajectory of my entire career. I patiently sit in my office chair, waiting for the president to call me and offer me some sort of award. Perhaps to let me walk on the moon. Better yet, someone will give me the key to the moon. I mean, well, first they'll have to build a door on the moon, but when they do that, they'll give me that key. Yeah, either way, I'm getting a key. But then, nothing happens. Sure, the video will garner some buzz and maybe even receive a few more views than usual. But after a day or two, things go back to normal. In fact, many of my solo videos have done better than some of my biggest collaborations. After waiting for the key to the moon several times, I've learned that a super cool collaboration isn't ever going to be the thing that makes my career. Instead, my career is the sum of everything I do. Other times I've made videos that weren't received well. While scrolling through the negative comments, I'd think, this is the end. My career is over. But it never is. Next week, I post 2 more videos and the previous one is forgotten. I wouldn't have much of a YouTube channel if one bad video caused the entire thing to collapse. That's the position I want to be in, one that allows for mistakes and growth in equal measure. I enter auditions with the same mentality. Of course, I want to do my absolute best in an audition room, but before I enter, I say to myself, this isn't going to make or break you. This puts my nerves at ease and allows me to stay calm. If I nail the audition and get the role, that's amazing, but my career still won't be defined by that one role. My empire is made up of my YouTube channel, my book, my collaborations, my social campaigns, and my partnerships. Having said all of this, I'm not suggesting you should approach important opportunities with nonchalance. You should always give 110% of your energy and effort. But at the same time, you want to be in a position where you cannot be impacted so easily. You can be the ruler of a strong empire, but still have the mentality of a hungry hustler. So if you find yourself stressing over one opportunity or one failure, perhaps the real problem is the foundation you've built. A boss cannot walk the walk if the ground is crumbling beneath them. You need to strengthen your empire. You are not a teetering tower. Your career is not standing on one leg getting a breathalyzer test on the side of the road. Your success is not a game of Jenga. You cannot be made or broken so easily. All right, listener, let's build your empire. List all the things that make up your success and that will not allow you to be made or broken with ease. List 4. Chapter 25. You're an architect. Social media has made everyone insecure. Don't get me wrong. If I could, I would marry YouTube, and I'm completely in love with Twitter because it provides me with endless entertainment and information and memes. Lots and lots of glorious memes. But social media also exposes us to what everyone else is doing. And let's be real. According to Facebook, everyone we know is happy, always dressed to impress, at the gym, politically correct, eating right, and constantly cuddling a cute puppy. When you're going through a rough patch and doubting your very existence, seeing Kelly from your social studies class on the beach with a martini and a hot boyfriend isn't very helpful. That's because we compare people's highlight reels to our blooper reel and accept that illusion as reality. We all do it. There have been so many times when I've had a day full of rejection and failure, and then I sign on to Facebook only to see that two of my high school friends just got married. I'm sitting there, single, trying to make it in Hollywood, alone in my apartment, eating burnt popcorn for dinner, and just staring at this wedding reception album thinking, what the hell am I doing with my life? Am I completely delusional? Should I be getting married? I don't even remember the last time I was in a relationship. I am literally not doing life correctly. Then, a few weeks later, I'll connect with one of my newly married friends, and they'll tell me how they got into a fight with their wife, and then signed on to Facebook, only to see a picture of me with Michelle Obama at the White House. They began to think, what the hell am I doing in my life? Here I am, getting married, spending time on floral arrangements instead of my career. What if I fail at my job? What if I never make it to the White House? I am literally not doing life correctly. Here's the thing, though. There is no correct way of living life. Similarly, there's no one path that leads to success. A Baus knows that there's so many different pathways to every destination in life. And just because you've only been given one set of directions, that doesn't mean 10 other roads don't all lead to the same place. Throughout my life, I believed that the only way to make it in Hollywood was to audition over and over again for movie roles. That's all I was ever exposed to in films and through stories people told me. You have to move to LA, struggle a lot, have a side job, and audition many times until one day you finally land a role. After moving to LA, I realized that auditioning over and over again was only one way to achieve success in Hollywood. My career on YouTube was actually paving a new pathway to the same end goal. You see, the audition process is very grueling and competitive. There can be 10 people who are all great for a role, and yet someone is chosen over the others for reasons no one will ever really understand. Looks, height, weight, accent, ethnicity, all of these characteristics can factor into the decision. My success on YouTube gives me something special, and that is a following. When I walk into an audition, the casting agent knows that I bring a very large online audience with me, and that my audience is ready to support me in my future projects. At first, I was very skeptical about the entire thing. I didn't like the idea of getting opportunities because I had a following online. I should have to audition over and over again while juggling 3 jobs because that's what people said I had to do. I expressed my discontent to my good friend Humble, saying, I don't want to be given opportunities because I have a following. I want to work for opportunities. His reply changed my entire perspective on the situation. He said, you weren't born with your following. You worked for it. He was absolutely correct. My following is the result of countless all-nighters, years of hard work, and an unwavering work ethic. Why shouldn't I create a new path to success in Hollywood via YouTube? Why shouldn't I change the game? Why shouldn't I create a new LA fairy tale? Don't get me wrong. I still have to audition for things over and over again and practice my acting. My online following doesn't land me movie roles that easily. I mean, if that were the case, I'd be Katniss Everdeen, but I am not. Though I could be. Just a note for any directors who are listening to this who are considering a spin-off franchise. Yeah, I'm proficient in whistling. However, my success on YouTube does allow me to take a path less frequently walked. My loyal following has gotten me into meetings with Mindy Kaling and Whitney Cummings. Auditioning didn't get me into those rooms. My online presence did. Mindy discovered my videos online and she liked my work. That's what got me in to see her. When people ask me for advice about the digital space, I always start by saying, I can tell you about the route I took, but I'm not familiar with the entire map. I say that because I believe new paths can be created every single day. We live in an exciting time where almost anything is possible. All you need to do is use your unique mind to create a path that works for you. Think about it. Each pathway only has so much room. You don't want to be that awkward third wheel who's forced to walk on the grass because of a crowded path, do you? No, you don't. You're not Milhouse. Think about where you want to get in life, what you want to achieve, and where you want to be years from now. Now think about the directions you've been given to get there. I want you to pretend like there's an earthquake and the roads between you and your goal are cracking. How are you going to get to your destination? Find two or three more paths that all lead to the same place. That's how you should view the roadmap to success. It's not a straight line, but a loopy, curvy maze that resembles one of those puzzles on the back of a cereal box. You're standing in the middle of a blank piece of paper. Unleash your inner architect and design your own path to success. Get wild, be creative, and don't get distracted by the flow of traffic. Traffic sucks anyways. Chapter 26. Be active. I am literally LOLing as I write this chapter because I'm the least qualified person to do so. Ask me to pull an all-nighter, and I will. Ask me to go on tour for 2 months and do 2 shows a day, and I'll do it with a smile on my face. Ask me to do 20 sit-ups, and I will run away from home, throw my phone into the ocean so no one can reach me, and hide in the deepest, darkest corner of the earth. Since I stopped dancing professionally years ago, I haven't been very good at keeping active. I tell myself it's because I have no time. You know, I'm always busy working. But as I grow older and hustle harder, I'm learning that being active and keeping my body healthy is part of my job. Being active has nothing to do with being sexy, sculpting a six-pack, or fitting into a smaller size. It's about making sure your body can keep up with your hustle. Having an amazing work ethic means nothing if your body can't handle your fast pace. Being active also doesn't mean you need to become a fitness guru. I mean, unless you want to. I often convince myself that in order to be healthy, I need to change everything about my life. I need to go to the gym for 2 hours every day and stop eating yummy food. But that's not the case. Making small changes in order to live a healthier lifestyle can make a big difference. Here are a few ideas. Number one, stretch in the mornings. I'm going to be honest. Most of my mornings begin in an extreme state of panic because I pressed snooze too many times, and now I need to brush my teeth while somehow eating cereal if I'm going to make it to my meeting on time. Yeah, I've never really tasted the original flavor of Cheerios. But the few times I have woken up on time and taken a few minutes to stretch, it's made a huge difference in my day. Not only do I feel more energized and ready to take on the day, but I also don't move like a 90-year-old grandma. Who would have thought? Number two, don't take the easy way. Throughout your day, take the stairs instead of an escalator. And you know, I think you've heard that before. Walk to your destination instead of driving. Get up to change the channel instead of using the remote. And when you're getting ready to go out, dance like no one is watching. Number three, don't be so hard on yourself. Sometimes I stop eating all my favorite foods in an attempt to be healthier. But after a few days, I cave and binge eat all the extra buttery popcorn. It's not a good look. You don't need to cut out your favorite foods completely. You just need to eat things in moderation. If you really want some popcorn, have the popcorn, but make yourself a deal. While the popcorn is popping, do some jumping jacks, and instead of extra butter, settle for regular. Number four, drink water. I don't think there's ever been a day in the history of my life, except for maybe when I needed to get an ultrasound, that I've had 8 glasses of water. That's just so much water. Also, there's way more delicious things to drink. But drinking water has so many benefits that it's literally stupid not to just do it. One of the ways I've learned to drink more water is to pay attention to my glass while I drink it. I know that may sound silly, but what I notice is that when I drink water, it's only because I'm thirsty. And so I take a few sips and I'm done with it. I never actually look at my glass and commit to finishing it. Talk about first world privilege. So now when I'm drinking water, I don't put the glass down or walk away until I finish the glass. Sometimes that even means telling myself, okay, 3 more gulps and then you can leave, as if I'm a 4-year-old child. For example, earlier today, I told myself that I wasn't allowed to enter my apartment from the hallway unless I finished the water in my bottle. Yeah, I stood there in the hallway guzzling water for 5 minutes. Here's another great life hack. Drink a glass of water every time you post on Instagram or your favorite social media platform. Some of you will be drinking 15 glasses a day, which is a good indicator that you should slow your roll. If you're overflowing, you'll know how our timelines feel. When I was on tour, I was in great shape. My show involved a lot of dancing, which helped build my stamina, and I was getting a lot more done in a day because my body could keep up with my mental hustle. I'd go to rehearsals, do 4 or 5 interviews, carry out a sound check, go for a meet and greet, perform a show, and then hop on a plane and do it all again the next day. When I'm not in shape, I walk up the stairs to my office and feel like I need to take a nap to recover. On tour, I also drank a lot of water because A, it was a nervous habit, and B, during every costume change, I would guzzle water to cool myself down. It wasn't until the tour was over that I realized I hadn't gotten a single pimple on my face in 2 months of traveling. H2O for the win! I know it can be hard, but it's important to be active and healthy. Aging is inevitable, and poor health will catch up to you very quickly. A boss knows the importance of creating a positive environment for the mind, heart, and soul. You can't have a happy mind if you have an unhappy body. It just doesn't work. They would fight and break up. You don't want your body sleeping on the sofa, do you? I didn't think so. All right, listener, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start your good habit right now. Before you listen to the rest of this audiobook, go grab yourself a glass of water and finish the entire thing. Go, 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 go! Chapter 27. Eliminate Stress. So there I am, on the final lap, driving full speed ahead with my tongue hanging out. My green skin is glowing with adrenaline as I pass Luigi. Sorry, dude, there's only room for one adorable green character on the road, and that's me, Yoshi. I make a sharp left turn, and before I can dodge it, my tires drive over a banana peel, causing me to spin out. Ugh, you stupid little banana! Luigi and all of his friends pass me. I finally stop spinning and continue racing full speed ahead until my cart slips on an oil spill and I spin out yet again. This time I careen off the track into the abyss. I fall into 10th, 11th, and now 12th place until finally the race ends without me crossing the finish line. I didn't reach my destination. Life is sort of like Mario Kart, and every day we play a different level. We wake up and race through the day, trying to reach the final destination. But we're bombarded by little nuisances at every turn. In Mario Kart, these nuisances are banana peels, oil spills, shells, hidden bombs, and bouncing fireballs. In real life, I mean, not to imply you're not real Mario, I'm not trying to throw shade at you like that, bro. These nuisances can include anything from a dead phone battery, to not having a hair tie when you need one the most, to a completely full parking lot outside the building where your next meeting is. Although these things all seem minor, when you add them up, they can throw a huge monkey wrench into your day. I'm a very detail-oriented person. In fact, sometimes I'm a little too detail-oriented, and I drive my team crazy. But that's because I understand that avoiding tiny little mishaps throughout the day will make a huge difference in my productivity. I've had days where my schedule consists of creating a video, doing 3 interviews, attending a meeting, and participating in a conference call, all while having a positive attitude. The last thing I need on a day like that is to have my phone die on me so I can't look up an address. Or not have a hair tie while I'm trying to eat, resulting in me swallowing a chunk of my own hair. Or most commonly, not being able to find parking near my next meeting, which I'm already running late for. These are all avoidable, unnecessary stresses that eat away at your soul and consume energy. Think of what you could do with just a little extra energy every day. So, how do you avoid these little banana peels throughout your day? You take preventive measures to ensure that the banana peels you slipped on today are tossed into the compost for tomorrow. Notice I said compost and not trash. Ah, how Mother Nature of me! If I've had a super frustrating day, before I call it a night, I will take a moment to sit down and list all the stresses I encountered throughout my day. No stress is too little or whiny or silly to go on the list. It's my day, my stress, and my productivity that's been affected, so I can put whatever I want on the list. If the wind kept blowing my hair and causing it to stick to my lip gloss, then wind is absolutely going on there. Here's an example of a list I've made. My stupid phone died at noon. My lips were dry and I felt unsexy. I couldn't find parking. I was starving. Putting all the challenges in my day on paper makes it much easier to identify and tackle them one by one. The best plan of attack? Be prepared. Looking at the list, I realized that parking has always been a huge stress for me, mostly because I suck at it. Now, whenever I have to drive to a meeting, I tell my assistant to list parking options in my iCal alongside the event details. That way, I'll know if the building has a parking lot, where to go if it's full, and if street parking is available. Parking panic? Solved. The day after I made that list, I bought 3 iPhone chargers. One for my car, one for my backpack, and one for my washroom. In fact, in almost every outlet of my apartment, you can find an iPhone charger because there is nothing more annoying than trying to turn on a dead iPhone. These days, resurrecting a dead phone is like bringing Jon Snow back to life. It takes forever. Also, if that was a Game of Thrones spoiler for you, then you have questionable priorities. Dead phone, solved. Next up, dry lips. If I'm in the middle of a meeting and my lips are dry, I literally cannot focus on anything that is happening because I'm positive everyone is staring at my lips and wondering how I survived 28 years with sandpaper on my face. So, in addition to the iPhone chargers, the next day I bought 3 chapsticks. One for my backpack, one for my car, and one for my night table. Parched lips? Solved. For someone who loves food so much, I am the worst eater ever. On a super busy day, I will actually forget to eat. Literally, forget. I'm so focused when it comes to completing my work that I will subconsciously tune out the little voice coming from my stomach, begging me to feed it. I'll become numb to hunger pains, and it's not until I start feeling faint that I remember I didn't eat breakfast. That's usually around 7 p.m. Thus, I place granola bars in all the same strategic places that I have my chargers and chapsticks. I've started to pre-pack a breakfast and leave it at the front door. A bag of cereal, an apple, and a bottle of water can go a long way. Hunger Games? Solved. These are all examples of very simple fixes that required only 2 things, recognition and problem solving. So often we deal with little issues throughout the day, get frustrated, and then do nothing to solve them but curse out loud. That's not productive. I have worked very hard to train myself to problem solve instead of becoming frustrated. I've learned that frustration will not manifest a phone charger or chapstick, no matter how much I yell and scream. Aside from implementing fixes to small problems, it's important to also eliminate stress around larger events and recurring tasks. I travel a lot, and that can either be pleasant or horrible. There's seldom a middle ground. As you can imagine, every time I travel, there are many things that get added to my stress list. By now, I've identified the things that vastly improve my travel experience, none of which require more than a little time and effort. Confirming my vegetarian meal. They will always screw this up. You must do it online and call the airline to confirm. It's basically rocket science for them. Securing a window seat on the right side of the plane. I have neck issues that are more prominent on the left side of my neck, so leaning my head to the left gives me migraines. Bringing my own shawl. I am always freezing with just the blanket they provide and never get any work done because I'm trying not to die of frostbite. Prepping for the immigration card. I have a picture of my passport saved in a secure folder on my phone so that I can easily fill these out. Also, I always make sure I have a pen easily accessible in my backpack. The above guidelines are now routine. You may think, okay, really, Lily, the right side of the plane? But hey, why not make little changes that make a difference to you? Every little bit of stress you eliminate contributes to a more productive day. That's not being a diva. It's placing yourself in a situation that allows you to be in optimal form. Another example of being proactive is having meetings after recurring events to review how things went. If you're going to be with the same team for a long time, you need to work together to make sure things go smoother and smoother each time. When I was on tour, the cast and crew and I would have a debriefing after every single show, from the very first show to the 31st show. Yes, we had a debriefing just for fun after the last show. We're obsessed. We would discuss every technical error or mishap in choreography and come up with a solution right then and there. Sometimes the solution was complicated and required a change in music, and other times the solution was as minor as someone moving slightly to the left. Everyone communicated their issues, and we all worked on solutions. The result was a cleaner show every single time. The next time you're in a stressful situation, instead of becoming flustered and frustrated, take a deep breath and ask yourself, what can I change next time to avoid this situation? and then proactively take steps to implement a solution. We only have 24 hours to finish today's level of Mario Kart, and we need to maximize our ability to get things done. After all, we have as many hours in the day as Beyonce, but we're at a disadvantage already because we're not Beyonce. Just kidding. You're just as capable as Beyonce. Yeah, I said that. I can see Luigi trembling in his boots already. Hey, listener, it's time to apply it. List two things that stressed you out this week and come up with solutions to eliminate them. Chapter 28, Mold Your Failure. My omelets always turn into scrambled eggs. I start off with confidence as my eggs spread perfectly across the pan in a magnificent circle. You know, every single time I think, oh my God, am I an Iron Chef? And as I order a chef's hat off Amazon with one hand, I use the other hand to flip my omelet. 100% of the time, I perform this move prematurely, and my omelet breaks into at least three pieces. After staring at my failure for 5 seconds and attempting to cancel my Amazon order, I grab a spatula and break the eggs into even more pieces. I like scrambled eggs better anyways. Failure doesn't necessarily mean the end of an idea or project. When things don't go the way we anticipate, it's easy to feel like we have to start over, but that's not always the case. Just because one door is closed, it doesn't mean it can't be knocked down or forced back open. I know the quote goes, "When one door closes, another opens." Well, why didn't anyone just try opening the closed door? Or better yet, finding a back door? I just feel like that quote doesn't factor in effort or imagination or logic. A boss knows that yes, sometimes failure does indeed mean starting over. But a boss also knows that other times failure can be molded into unexpected success. In December 2015, I was working on my 12 collaborations of Christmas, a series I do every year that consists of 12 high-profile collaborations with a holiday theme. Each year I try to make the series bigger and better, obviously, like a boss, and I reach out to people who excite me so that they can excite my audience as well. I've worked with people like Stephanie McMahon, Adam Devine, Russell Peters, and Gina Rodriguez. That year, I decided to reach out to one of my biggest inspirations, an A-list movie actress whom I adore. I had a good feeling about it because she had a film set to release during the holiday season. You see, when another artist has a new project coming out, it's easier to confirm a collaboration because there's an opportunity for cross-promotion. Apparently, there was an event being held in New York City in 2 weeks that was aimed toward marketing her upcoming film. Part of the marketing plan was to highlight influential women through a variety of media, including online content. Ding, ding, ding. Hello, I am a creator of online content. How may I help you? My team set up a call for me to pitch an idea for the collaboration. I came up with a creative challenge called the Girl Love Challenge. The idea was to make a game out of spitting rapid-fire compliments at pictures of influential women and encourage viewers to do the same. Very simple and effective. To my great joy, my idea was well-received and I was all set to fly to New York to shoot the video in just a few days. I was over the moon, and not just our moon, Jupiter's moons, all 67 of them. 2 days before I was supposed to take off, I still didn't have a flight booked. It made me feel unsettled. It's cool, though, I thought. This is how LA functions, you know, super last minute. I continued ironing out the details of my Girl Love Challenge until my manager called me with some bad news. For whatever reason, the shoot wasn't going to happen. I wasn't going to New York, and I wasn't going to collaborate with one of my biggest inspirations. Just like that, in a matter of minutes, everything fell apart. I was absolutely heartbroken. For a whole day, I walked around like a zombie, completely unmotivated and disappointed. I loved the Girl Love Challenge idea so much, and I was bummed that it wouldn't happen. I complained and ranted and then finally tired myself out and went to bed. While lying there, unable to sleep, I had a spontaneous thought. What if I didn't need to collaborate with a movie star to do the challenge? What if I stopped focusing on the one person I couldn't meet with and started thinking about all the people I did have access to? After all, I believed in the idea more than anything. Right then and there, I sent a voice note to my management saying that the Girl Love Challenge would happen, regardless, and I would need their help. I was going to pry the door back open. Over the next week, I contacted every influential woman I knew, from Grace Helbig to Shay Mitchell, and got them to send me a clip complimenting another woman, aka the Girl Love Challenge. Instead of focusing the whole thing around an upcoming movie, I focused on my channel's demographic and pivoted the challenge toward making a positive difference for my large female audience. I released a video featuring 18 influential women as one of my Christmas collaborations, and the response was overwhelming. Countless media outlets picked up the video, and it reached the likes of Tyra Banks and Priyanka Chopra, to name a few, who each tweeted about it and took part in the challenge. Girl Love became a global phenomenon. Young girls across the globe were complimenting each other on social media using the hashtag Girl Love. After all the hype died down, which it eventually did, I thought the Girl Love challenge would die too. It would become a once-upon-a-time viral hit. However, the video birthed a passion within me, and in 2016, I hired a team and launched Girl Love as a full-fledged social campaign. Today, as I record this, Girl Love has a complete social strategy and an episodic series on my channel. It got me inside the White House to discuss women's issues with Michelle Obama and recently allowed me to travel to Kenya to learn more about women's education in the Maasai community. Furthermore, a Girl Love Rafiki bracelet has been created in partnership with Me2We, an amazing organization, Google them, and the proceeds are going toward giving Kenyan girls scholarships to attend secondary school. I also held a workshop in Singapore to teach young girls how to spread girl love, and the venue was completely sold out. All of this happened because my collaboration didn't work out. Every success that Girl Love has is a direct result of molding the broken pieces of a previous failure. In most negative situations in life, you can create a positive outcome if you just look hard enough. Aside from the Girl Love challenge, there is a much greater example from my life in which I took something not so great and made it great. When people ask me what I'm most grateful for in life, they get confused when I reply, depression. I started making YouTube videos in 2010 because I was trying to make myself happy and escape depression. I thought if I could make others laugh, then I could also make myself laugh. My dedication to YouTube was me self-medicating. It was a pick-me-up, a distraction, and a goal to work toward. To this day, depression is the worst feeling I've ever encountered in my life. It was heart-wrenchingly painful. Everything I have today, every video, success, and opportunity is the direct result of taking that pain and turning it into something positive. Comedy. I'll never have to take a pottery class because I've already molded the most difficult thing, my life. To take a failure and turn it on its head, to make something unexpected out of it, is a beautiful thing. I could have abandoned the Girl Love Challenge. I could have let depression take me down a path that led nowhere. But instead, I decided to get my hands dirty with some Play-Doh and create something new. Often we're too busy being disappointed or upset to recognize that the tools we need to create a new masterpiece are right in front of us. They just require a little rearranging and assembly. Don't let disappointment blind you to potential. Roll up your sleeves, use your creativity as glue, and mold your success. Chapter 29. Climb Another Ladder. My limo pulls up and the driver walks around to open the door for me. As soon as I step on the red carpet, my fans go crazy and start chanting my name. Cameras are flashing and my security is surrounding me. I'm about to walk into the premiere of my very own movie, A Trip to Unicorn Island, a documentary that follows me on my world tour. It's taking place at the prestigious Chinese Theater in Los Angeles. The entire street is shut down for my event. The film is a hit and I have a blast at the after party. People are congratulating me left, right, and center. Mama, I've made it. Fast forward to 2 days later, and I'm nervously driving around a studio completely lost, already 2 minutes late. I park somewhere random and speed walk to the closest person I see to ask for directions. They have no clue. I find someone else, and they proceed to draw me a map on a pamphlet with a dying pen. I race left, then right, then left again, trying desperately to follow these chicken scratch directions. Finally, I find the building and walk into my audition. I sit down in a small room with a water fountain and two other people. No one even looks at me. Eventually, a woman calls my name and I follow her into a smaller room. She riffles through some paperwork without giving me a proper look and says, "Do you have your headshot?" Confused, I reply, "My agent should have sent all my information." She looks up at me and says, "Oh, sorry, found it. Lily, right?" "Yep, that's me." I do the audition, and within 120 seconds, I'm back out the door struggling to find my car. I am a nobody. These two experiences are my life in a nutshell. Within 48 hours, I go from being a superstar to Lily, right? Sometimes it's even within the same day. In the digital space, I'm considered a star. But in Hollywood, I'm just another person waiting to audition. I've learned that success in one area of your life doesn't guarantee or entitle you to success in another. That's why A-list celebrities have relationship problems, and the most popular kids in school may not have the best grades. Just because you've climbed one ladder doesn't mean you won't have to start from the bottom of another ladder. When I decided to try getting into TV and film, it took me a while to get used to the audition process. I come from a world where I write, shoot, edit, and release my own content. I make the rules and I know what I want. When I walk into an audition, I have one sentence describing the character I'm supposed to play, and a room full of people watching me critically. It's the perfect atmosphere to ensure that you don't do your best. But just like I earned my stripes on YouTube, I knew I would have to start from the bottom of the Hollywood ladder. My career in the digital space gives me a slight advantage because I have a good agency repping me, but regardless of that, I'm still out there auditioning for two-line cameos in movies. I'm at the top of one ladder and the bottom of another. Is it frustrating? Of course. I'm doing a diagonal split across two ladders and my legs hurt. So why do I do it? Because I don't want my pride to get in the way of achieving everything I want. The last thing I want is for my ego to prevent me from thinking I shouldn't have to earn something. If I want to expand my brand and skill set, which I do, then I need to earn it, which I will. It's also a matter of respecting a different ladder and everyone on it. The climb up any ladder teaches you lessons and provides you with the necessary experiences. If I went from the top of my current ladder to the top of another ladder, I would have no clue what was below me. I would be inexperienced and probably fall to my death. In the same way, someone from another industry who jumps onto my ladder shouldn't expect to be on the top. I mean, with all due respect, if you're going to stand beside me on the ladder I'm on and have no idea what a YouTube annotation is, that's problematic. There are many examples of people who have climbed multiple ladders and will probably continue to do so. The Rock, wait, have I mentioned him before in this audiobook? Went from being a huge pro wrestler to a successful actor. That's two ladders. He didn't start his acting career as the world's most paid actor. He earned that title by climbing his way up. Drake went from acting to music. That's two ladders as well. Justin Timberlake did the exact opposite and went from music to acting and back again. There is no all-access pass. No matter who you are, there's going to be something you want to do that will require you to start from the bottom. That shouldn't scare you because you're a boss and you thrive on challenges. You don't feel entitled to success. You feel empowered to earn it. So earn it again and again. Out of the Blue, 2010. It's such a weird sensation to feel unimportant and invisible, and yet also feel like every person in the world is staring at you. I feel like there's this huge neon sign above my head that reads depressed or worthless. I want to stay in my room all day, sitting in the dark, locked away from the world. That's where I feel safest, although to be honest, I'm the least safe person in my life. When I'm walking down the street, everyone is looking at me. I mean, I might not see them looking at me, but I know they are. My brain is telling me they are. My darkness is an aura that does not go unnoticed. I hate when they look at me, and I wish they would leave me alone, because I'm not proud of the person they see. I'm so uncomfortable in public and around people. I look down nervously and wring my hands in my pocket, counting down the seconds until I can hide again. The only sanctuary I have is at the temple. I go there every day, and I sit in the back, as far away from everyone else as possible. But I still feel as if everyone is looking at me. Why wouldn't they? I radiate sadness. When I get home, I struggle to look in the mirror because I don't want to face myself. I don't know what to say to my reflection. We haven't been friends for a while now. So I look away and swallow the reality that tomorrow will be just like today. Another day filled with people staring at me. I am dreading it. 2015. It's such an exhilarating sensation to feel so loved and have so many people staring at you. I see a huge sign with flashing lights outside the venue that reads, "Lily Sings, A Trip to Unicorn Island, Sold Out." I know tonight is going to be magical. I want to be on tour forever, sitting in my dressing room, ready to take on another city. I feel my best when I'm on stage, and to be honest, it's where I am my best. I pace back and forth backstage, fired up, ready to put on the show of a lifetime. My stride is strong and full of power. My chin is up, my head is high, and my body is ready. I am so happy. When I walk onto the stage, everyone is on their feet, screaming with excitement, looking at me. It doesn't just feel like they're looking at me. I can see them looking at me, and it feels magnificent. When I'm performing, my charisma can't go unnoticed. I'm floating with complete confidence from one side of the stage to another. I feel comfortable here with all eyes on me. And when I have to leave this stage, I'll be counting down the seconds until I return. I take a long look at myself in the mirror before and after every show. My reflection is of Superwoman. I look her right in the eyes and have a conversation with her, telling her how proud I am of her. She's my best friend. I reluctantly pull myself away from the mirror and begin taking my costume off. I feel blessed that tomorrow is another show and I get to live this reality again. I am living for it. Part 3. Make heads turn. A boss doesn't blend into a crowd. They stand out. In this section, you'll learn how to make people pay attention to you, how to interact with others effectively, how to have an unforgettable presence, and how to use your deeper understanding of who you are to be the best possible version of yourself. There are 7 billion people on the planet. That's 14 billion socks to knock off. Chapter 30. You are not a parking ticket. Since birth, I'm sure you've heard the magical words, "You're special," repeated by your parents, your teachers, and your favorite children's TV show host. I grew up watching Barney, that giant purple dinosaur who's always smiling and friendly. Now that I think about it, maybe he was a little too smiley. Now then again, Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato were on that show as toddlers, so I guess that would make me smile nonstop too. This purple friend of mine would tell me on a daily basis how special I was, and how special my friends were, and my classmates. And my neighbors, even though they would put their excess garbage bags on our driveway because they exceeded the limit, yeah, we saw you. Everyone was special. Well, I'm here to tell you two things. Number one, you're special. And number two, you're not special. You're special because you are a unique individual possessing a set of characteristics that no one else in the world has. Even if you have an identical twin born 4 minutes after you, in which case you should probably hug your mother's uterus on a daily basis, there is still no one in the world exactly like you. And that makes you special. But that specialness goes away if you don't do anything with your unique characteristics. Harry Potter is special because he's a powerful wizard that uses his powers for good. Imagine if he discovered his powers, got accepted into Hogwarts, and then decided, nah, I'm good. I'm just gonna continue living under these stairs, not using my powers, and let these next 4 books be a major flop. Sorry, J.K. Rowling, no bestsellers for you. Millennials in particular have been raised in an environment that validates them left and right and makes them feel entitled to success and great things. Instead of working hard to achieve success, some of them have grown up under the illusion that success should be automatically granted to them. I believe there are a few reasons for this. First, social media has made it easy to feel special for no reason at all. If you can sign into Tumblr, then you deserve to feel special. And look, there's a quote right there to assure you, you queen. If you ever feel like you're not accomplishing enough, that's okay. Your last Instagram picture got 70 likes. Retweets, double taps, reblogs, and followers are all modern-day forms of validation. Today, an Instagram picture of you at the gym that gets a lot of likes is more validating than the actual benefits of going to the gym. Who needs health and muscles when I got double taps? That's the real win, and that's whack. Second, now more than ever, there are 10,000 people online and in real life telling you how to raise your kids. Feed them organic foods, tell them you love them 4 times a day, and hug them with both your arms every half hour so they feel your warmth. Now, I'm not a parent, so I'm not going to comment too much on raising kids, but I will say that I have witnessed firsthand the effects of parents who too readily validate their children and everything they do. I once had a friend who was awesome. He was truly a nice guy, very polite and pleasant to be around. Over time, I noticed that he had one characteristic that I didn't particularly enjoy, and that was his sense of entitlement. During an argument, he would assume that it was everyone's job to nurture his feelings and make them a priority. If his accomplishments were not celebrated to the extreme, he would feel disrespected. If he made plans and they didn't go exactly the way he wanted, he would become enraged. I didn't understand why he had this entitlement complex until I met his family. Within moments, it was clear that he had grown up surrounded by constant validation. Every sentence was praise for their godlike son who was the pride and joy of the entire human race. Every single accomplishment, no matter how big or small, garnered celebratory cake, gifts, and a roundtable discussion about how great my friend was. Within an hour, I was drowning in a pool of validation. And it wasn't a pleasant pool, you know, with a swim-up bar and cute floaties, but rather quite concerning. I now understand why my friend acted the way he did. He'd been raised as the king of the family and thus believed he should be treated like a king in all other situations. Well, what a harsh reality he is going to face in life. A boss knows that if they're going to feel validated, it should happen only when they accomplish goals or contribute to society. It's so easy to fall into the trap of feeling special for no reason, especially since validation feels so good. A few years ago, I was asked to host VidCon, a huge convention that features YouTube creators and thousands of fans. In other words, it's 3 days of wonderful chaos and screaming as fans try to sneak into hotel rooms, take selfies with their favorite creators, and get various parts of their bodies autographed. Now, as you know, I take performing very seriously. No matter how big or small an event is, I want to ensure I do the best possible job. And so I'm constantly asking about talking points, production, and mic cues. Moments before I went on the VidCon stage, I approached the show producer to confirm everything that was going to happen during my segment. His response was, "Honestly, you're Superwoman, and they're going to cheer and go crazy for you regardless of what happens." You might think that would have made me feel special, but in truth, I felt my entire soul crushed under the weight of his validation. I value the performing arts, and I work hard to create meaningful, funny content. I never want to get cheers on a stage simply for standing there like a bag of bones. I've gotten the same type of validation in the comment section of my videos. I've read comments that say, "You are the funniest person in the world and the best human being ever, and everyone else sucks compared to you." Does that mean I should walk around thinking I'm the funniest person on the planet? God, no. That's stupid, because Amy Schumer exists on the planet. Feeling validated from over-the-top positive comments is the same thing as getting discouraged by over-the-top negative comments. I try to stay immune to both, even though validation feels great. Sometimes when I ask my audience what they want to see in the next video, I'll get responses like, "You can make a whole video just sitting and saying nothing and we'd still watch it." But I would rather strangle myself with my hair than make that video. And by the way, strangling myself with my hair is very possible. My cousin used to do it to me all the time when we were younger. Oh, but it was playful though, like, don't call the cops. I never want to let my own entitlement get in the way of my content. That's a slippery slope and I choose not to go skiing. I treat feedback the way teachers treat standardized tests. You cut off the highest and lowest outliers and don't let them impact the overall score. The greatest feedback and the worst feedback are both dangerous in their own way. On that point, one of the biggest dangers of being easily validated is the fact that validation is a major threat to one's ambition and hustle. When you have a list of 10 goals and people throw you parties after you've finished 3 of them, that might make you feel like maybe the other 7 goals aren't that important. Or you know what? I'll get to them later, after all these celebratory events being held in my honor are over. Validation is temporary, and a boss thinks long term. Don't get me wrong, you should definitely celebrate when you accomplish something great. Celebrating yourself is an important part of loving yourself. But be aware of getting validated without reason or too often, because an overly comfortable environment is not one in which hustle thrives. I'm confident that one of the reasons my hustle is so raging is that my mother keeps her validations locked away in a chest that she only occasionally opens. I can call and tell her about the biggest deal I just signed, and she will respond by saying, "That's really good." That's it. She's happy and proud, but there's no need to throw me a parade every time I do something. That helps me keep my goals in perspective and not get sidetracked by the euphoria of glory. Nice comments on Instagram, compliments in real life, and celebratory dinners can all be great. They mean your friends and family care about you. But do not let these gestures cloud your sense of reality and affect why you do what you do. Or worse, let them convince you that you don't need to do anything else. If you're reading this and feeling offended, I'm going to ask you to take a deep breath and let your guard down. Don't stop listening to this audiobook and go watch Barney videos on YouTube to make yourself feel better. It's a beautiful thing to let achievements make you feel good, rather than praise and other fluffy things. You're not a parking ticket. Don't get so easily validated. Participation ribbons are for country fairs, not life. You don't get one for being born. Chapter 31. Protect your vision. In sex education class, I learned that when a man and woman have intercourse, this woman can become impregnated and carry a child in her belly for 9 months. Me, on the other hand, I have many kids, but I didn't have intercourse to create them. I have just the kids with none of the action. That's why I drink vodka on Tuesdays. Recently, I've learned that there are other ways to have children, or at least in my opinion, the fulfillment that comes from having kids. I often tell my mom that she doesn't need to keep asking me about grandkids because I've given birth to so many brain babies. In fact, you're listening to one right now, this audiobook. Like I would with a newborn, I nurture my ideas, help them grow, and hope that one day they will become something great. When my ideas are young and can barely walk on their own, they keep me up at night. Similarly, when my ideas grow old, I realize I can't hold on to them anymore, and I need to let them go. Good parents have an innate desire to protect their children, and I have that same instinct when it comes to my brain babies. Our children are exposed to so many negative influences. The kids at school might do drugs. The media encourages a superficial lifestyle. And then there's always that one annoying uncle at parties who tries to give your baby pop just to shut them up. Just the same, my brain baby is out there in the cruel world, susceptible to bad influences, and it's up to me to make sure I protect it. In 2014, I woke up one morning and felt nauseated. I ran to the washroom and puked my guts out, looked up in the mirror, and knew this was morning sickness. Also, I'm totally kidding, and that didn't happen, but I did wake up feeling a strange sensation. The night before had been wild. I'd been hosting a dance competition, and the event was sold out. So many of my supporters had come out to see me MC, which was really sweet, since really, I would be on stage for only a few seconds at a time. I remember standing on the side of the stage, listening to the crowd, and then suddenly feeling a jolt in my heart. In that moment, I really wished I could be on stage for the entire show, connect with the audience, and do things my way. For years, I had been hosting, doing 15-minute stand-up routines, or making short speeches, and I suddenly didn't want that anymore. I wanted my own show. Fast forward to the next morning, I woke up feeling inspired and knew that I had been impregnated with a brain baby. For the next year or so, I worked on my very first world tour, called A Trip to Unicorn Island. Like most new mothers, I had no idea what the hell I was doing, but I knew I loved this baby with all my heart. I wanted to feed it organic fruits and use only natural baby products. Whenever I met someone new, I pulled out my phone to show them pictures of my tour creative because it was growing so fast. My Facebook feed was filled with sentimental posts about my tour. I was that mother. After several late nights filled with pizza and alcohol, by the way, the good thing about brain babies is that drinking may actually have a positive impact on them, unlike real human babies who are just selfish and demanding, kicking you all up in your uterus. Just saying. I had a vision of how I wanted this show to look. I had ideas for everything, from the marketing to the costumes to the merchandise being sold. Now, when people embark on their first tour, it's usually small, often within a particular region of the globe, and the crew is minimal. But I wanted my show to be a world tour that traveled across the planet, was theatrical in nature, and was above and beyond anything I'd ever done. It came as no surprise when my manager called me and said the production company had crunched all the numbers and had some concerns. From that point on, meetings and phone calls were filled with various obstacles that threatened my vision. Finances, logistics, legalities, and a bunch of other ridiculous things like gravity. Pfft, whatever gravity, you're not the boss of me. One of the major sticking points was the number of dancers that would be on tour with me. I envisioned 8, but was told that we could only afford 4. Over and over again, I was told I needed to confirm 4 dancers, or else the tour would not be financially viable. Here's the thing, though. With 4 dancers, it wouldn't be my tour, the one I had in my mind. It would be my team's tour, my financial advisor's tour, but not my tour, and that wasn't okay with me. I signed off on taking full financial responsibility for 8 dancers. I finally had my 8 dancers confirmed, but this was just the first of many battles I would fight. I went back and forth with the costume designer, not budging on what I wanted because I had a very specific vision in my mind. She kept coming to me with reasons why my vision wouldn't be possible to execute, but I was adamant. My dancers were to be the gatekeepers of Unicorn Island, and they had to look perfect. My baby would not wear an ugly onesie. My baby had to wear a cute, fluffy outfit so I could take pictures of it and plaster those pictures on the internet. That's what motherhood is about. After months of protecting my baby with invisible boxing gloves, the time finally came to start the tour. Little did I know the actual journey across the planet would be filled with unforeseen threats to my vision. In India, some of my jokes had to be altered due to legalities and cultural appropriateness. In Perth, Australia, the size of the stage was a third of our minimum requirement. In Dubai, the staff continuously interrupted my show, and the security allowed fans to run on stage during my set. But I'm a mother, and mothers do not give up when it comes to protecting their young. So time and time again, I tried my best to find a solution. I just wanted my baby to shine and make a difference in the world. Now, this all sounds ideal and magical in some sense, but a boss understands that there is a cost to protecting your vision. With dancers and costumes, I took on financial risk. With stage dimensions and venue restrictions, the dancers would have to rearrange formations to accommodate the changes. With logistics and scheduling, I sacrificed the amount of time I had to sleep. When it comes to protecting your vision, there will always be some cost, and you need to be prepared to deal with it. More often than not, the cost will be a huge amount of work. If you want things a certain way, then you better be on the front lines of the battle with a suit of armor ready to protect your brain baby. The next time you have an idea, recognize that your idea is your baby, and if you parent it well, it will grow up to be a wonderful event, product, or campaign. Your baby can change the world, but first you must make a promise to protect it. You should always welcome feedback and take into account suggestions that may help your baby in a positive way. But if you hear that little voice in your head screaming in protest, you should stick to your guns. Welcome to parenthood. You should go to a hardware store right now and buy some childproof locks and earplugs, because that's what parenting is all about. That and getting peed on while changing diapers. Dang, I guess gravity really does exist.
Chapter 32, Be the Dumbest. And I gotta pee. Hey, Kunal, do you mind doing this chapter for me? Thanks.
Snoop Dogg has taught me a lot of valuable lessons in life. For starters, he taught me that you can spell animal names however you want. So if you feel like repeating a letter, don't let anyone stop you. Second, if something is hot, drop it. And last, I'm beautiful and he just wanted me to know. I learned all these things through Snoop Dogg's iconic music, but it was during a YouTube creator summit he was speaking at that I ended up learning the most. He was participating in a panel about staying relevant in the industry, and I was sitting on the edge of my seat trying to soak in all the wisdom. He said a lot of really great things that day, but one thing in particular stood out to me. When asked how he's been able to have such a long, successful career, Snoop Dogg replied, "I'm the dumbest person on my team, and that's how I do it." From a young age, we're always taught to be the best, the fastest, and the smartest. You don't aim for second place in a race, nor do you compete in a spelling bee hoping someone else is a better speller than you. That said, a boss knows that in certain situations, it's beneficial to be the dumbest person in the room. Surrounding yourself with people who are more experienced and knowledgeable than you are is a great way to step outside your comfort zone and continue to learn and grow. When it comes to my team, I am the talent. This means that it's my job to be in front of the camera, on stage, or in a studio. Although I may be good at entertaining the masses, I wouldn't be where I am if it weren't for a number of other people who are really good at their jobs. I'm good at telling jokes, but my manager is better than me at strategizing my overall career. Performing in front of 18,000 people is no problem for me, but when it comes to the legalities of that performance, my lawyer is much more knowledgeable than me. The stories and lessons in this book are my brain babies, but without my editor, you wouldn't be able to read my incorrectly spelled sentences. Sometimes not even autocorrect can save you. When it comes to my team, I'm the best at doing what I'm supposed to do, but I'm the absolute dumbest when it comes to everything else. And I wouldn't want it any other way. It's like we're all holding our own paddle, one that no one else knows how to handle, and we're rowing in unison. Being the dumbest person on your team doesn't make you a stupid person. It means you're smart enough to select people to work with you that you can learn from. It also means checking your ego and being okay with the fact that you aren't the best at something. When I'm in a meeting with my team, every member has something to contribute to the conversation based on their area of expertise. We'll be discussing an upcoming shoot, and all I'm thinking about is how I can prepare to be the best on set. Suddenly, my makeup artist will bring up a few concerns around makeup transitions, and I'll just sit there quietly, dumbfounded, because I have no idea what a highlight is. I didn't know people were using highlighters on their face. Isn't that like ink poisoning or something? And then my agent will start discussing exclusivity around the photos and use a whole bunch of acronyms that I've never heard before. I feel like a mother who is reading her child's Twitter feed and needs to Google the meaning of LMAO. The point I'm making is that all of these questions and ideas are things I would never think of or, to be honest, don't have the capacity to think of. I'm not a trained makeup artist, and I don't know how to be an agent. So what do? I own being the dumbest, and I ask questions. What good would it be to surround yourself with smarter people if you can't learn from them? There seems to be this universal fear of looking stupid or sounding dumb. Who is dumber? The person who pretends they know everything, or the person who doesn't and